The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC.
Does your organization value high-octane, honest truth? Or do you prefer sugar-coated feedback that only gives you more of the same old, same old? We're going to talk about breaking that cycle today on the Peter McClelland Show. We start now. Welcome to the Peter McClelland Show. This is your host, Peter McClelland. Thanks for listening. Appreciate that. And this show today is interesting because for me, I have to be honest. I think all of us have a tendency to not want to hear high-octane truth from time to time. And yet when we do, we can make something we're going to talk about today, crystal clear decisions. And how powerful and good is that? So today I welcome to the show Jill Johnson of Johnson Consulting Services. She is an expert in consulting people on what matters. And so, Jill, first of all, welcome to the Peter McClelland Show.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here.
Great to have you here. So tell me, you are really, really, really big on this whole thing of clear-cut decisions, and yet so many organizations don't seem to get there. What do you think are some of the primary things that are the blocks for people to make crystal-clear decisions?
Well, I think one of the things that you're dealing with is that you have – when you're dealing with a group decision, you have everybody who's coming to the table with a very different decision paradigm in how they make decisions. And so you've got all these competing groups kind of coming together, trying to figure out, well, what's important and what's not. Most of the time, I see that as a result of that, that organizations have not been candid or honest or really reflective about what may be happening that's changing their market or their customers' needs. And that's often the most difficult part that they have at the front end of how they make decisions, is they're just not really clear about what's going on.
Well, this is a real big deal in your world. Why are you so fascinated by the whole thing of decision and the process of making decisions?
My decision-making passion really goes back to when I was about 12 years old, and I was fascinated with my immigrant ancestors who came to America, because that was a major life decision. I mean, when they left, they really left. There wasn't the internet, there weren't phones. They were packing into one trunk, getting on a ship, and sailing off into this thing called America.
No plans on coming back.
I mean, it was an actual move. You're talking mid to late 1800s, early 1900s. And so, and I had family members who had been immigrants that I knew. And so having that fascination about how you make a choice that sometimes is so significant and so profound was always fascinating. But I didn't get really good at decision making until I got into my MBA program. And then I started working as a consultant in terms of really defining how do you make the best decision when you may not have all the right information, but you have to make a critical decision. And so that really evolved over time.
Mm, wow. So are there certain traits that you see in people that are better than others, or is this a skill that people can perhaps acquire?
I think it's a skill that people can acquire. As I was saying earlier, you know, we come to every decision with the family members and the role models that we've carried in that have taught us how you make decisions. So if you grew up in a family where the adults in your world didn't make good decisions, or they did that, what I call the hand wave, and they just let other people decide, it'll be more difficult for you to make decisions. But if you recognize it, you can consciously decide to do it better and differently and walk yourself through some steps and some processes. But people who have had experience and practice it as a skill set, even from early on as a youth or in college, the leadership opportunities you have there give you choices and chances to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And then as you get into your early career, the same thing. So if you work at it as a process and go, I'm going to do better, I'm going to be better, I'm going to reflect on the decision that I made when I have information on the outcome, did I make the right one? What do I need to look at? How do I need to do it better going forward?
Mm. Oh, that's so important. I just, oof. I know there's pain involved. Let's camp on that for a little bit. What happens when people make either no decision or poor decisions? I mean, obviously there's some, things don't go well, but what ultimately is the long-term pain? What are some of the things that people encounter as a result of not making good decisions?
Well, I think when you deal with entrepreneurs and small businesses in particular, the consequences of not making good decisions are you waste a lot of money. And I don't know about you, but I don't have a lot of money to waste today with this kind of economic climate.
That's right.
And so, I see people holding on to bad employees. They don't change their marketing tactics and approaches because we've always done it this way.
Right.
And that fear factor of trying something different because they don't understand or know fully what the outcome will be, people just get what I call paralyzed. Mm. And so that really becomes a problem. And then the other thing that happens too, if there's an indecision and they just choose not to do anything, the world and the market changes around them. And I remember I had a client in Chicago that I was working with, and we were in this big senior executive meeting, and I was sharing some very, very tough feedback to them about the market and how they had been repositioned. They historically had been the market leader for a very affluent clientele, and I said to them, unless you make major investments in redesigning your services, your amenities, your physical plant, you have now become a mid-market player. You are not the leading edge of the market. And watching senior execs go white in the face is not a fun thing to see. Yeah. But they hadn't visited the competition. They just assumed that because historically they had been a superior player in the market, that was the position they would always have. And their competitors, new competitors who'd come in with glitz and pretty, had completely redefined what upscale in that market was, and they were nowhere in the neighborhood of being upscale any longer.
Wow.
And they ended, and it was the first time I ever told a client to tear a building down and start over.
Tear it down.
It was a 40-year-old building, and they had retrofitted it as much as they could, and it just simply wasn't going to be viable. And to their everlasting credit, I mean, it was a client I'd worked with for a long time, and I've impacted well over $250 million worth of their investment decisions based on the market research and the work that I've done for them. But it was still painful to hear because it was their flagship site, and they did. They tore it down, and they built some newer amenities and features that made them more competitive. And, while they still weren't going to be quite at the same high end as the new competitor who built all beauty and brand new from the beginning, they were back in the game. And that, for many organizations, is really the key. Can we get back in the game financially and become a more competitive player again going forward?
I guess the one thing that comes to mind, is just reading through this morning, when I get up, I do a little quiet time reading, but then I'll turn to the news and I'll see what's going on on the internet and financial news. And I see that there's, a number of articles out about not just about what's going on in Europe and the implications for the economy there and here, but also just there's this real mixed bag of corporate earnings are up, but they're up from a standpoint of companies cost cutting. A lot of cost cutting, and some companies aren't looking so good. There's a whole list of companies this morning they were talking about that are just sort of looking rather shaky.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're raising cash it may be good going forward, but how do you make good decisions when it seems like the world around us is changing so incredibly quickly?
I have a speech I do on strategic planning in turbulent times, and part of what I talk about in that program is that you have to look at making smaller shifts and changes. People often think that with planning and new strategy that you have to go big and it's everything. You tear the building down, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's not typically what you have to do to survive and thrive. And so if you can make smaller choices, run a pilot program and see how well that people respond to that, that gives you some control in moving and shifting more carefully into maybe something that is really going to be much more appealing. I mean, you look at an organization, say, like Netflix. I mean, I have a lot of comment about the strategy that they had when they increased their pricing, but now they've split it into two separate businesses. So I think it's Quickster is the DVDs by mail and Netflix, which they see as their future, is the streaming and the online. So, they made some mistakes in how they deployed the price increase, But what they were looking at is how do we continue to have a business model that will be viable in the long-term future, and where are we going to deploy the resources to? Back to the cash thing, though, I still think in an environment that is this confusing, that having your cash resources is still a good thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. No, I wasn't diminishing
exactly.
that. Exactly. Yeah, no.
And because what it does is it allows you to basically thrive and or to survive through
sure.
this uncertainty without doing what often happens to people is they get so overextended in debt. And most people, and this drives me crazy with small business people, a lot of times the debt that they're investing in isn't in anything that's going to give them a return on investment.
Right.
And so when I look at the decisions of the owners, oftentimes I'll get in and discuss some of the history of, you know, kind of tell me what's happened in the last 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did this evolve? I know one client, the current management didn't understand how they'd gotten to the certain point that they were. So I literally went back through old files in the corporate vault to really figure out what had been the deep history on how the decisions had been made. And they were based off of things that were bad decisions 30 years earlier,
yikes,
but were still being implemented because we just always done it that way.
Right.
And so when you can break through that kind of paradigm and perspective, that gives an organization the freedom then to really redefine and do a better job. And so if you've got cash in the bank, then you've got those resources to deploy.
Right.
But
absolutely,
if you've been, you know, putting debt into pretty things like office furniture and mm-hmm, you know, a fancy rent when no client ever comes to your office.
Not a good idea.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, it does.
It happens all the time. And so people end up not being able to survive those downturns. And I also tell clients, plan for the downturn.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how many recessions have we been through in the last 10, 15 years? There's always a financial cycle that we go through, a peak and valley.
Right.
And you plan for that. So when I do strategies and scenario planning for clients, we'll run scenarios based on best case, likely case, worst case, just so they can understand how small shifts and changes in the revenue stream drop through the financial statements to the bottom line. And it gives the owner some better sense of, okay, I could really be in trouble if I, you know, jump off the deep end unless I fully understand it.
Well, I would think there's a lot of people out there that would benefit from the kind of counsel that you bring, especially if you can help them arrive at making better, crystal clear decisions, if it's raising cash. Personally, the way things are looking, it looks to me like the economy is slowing again.
I agree.
You know, I don't know that it's the end of the world. Some of the articles you read make it sound like it's, you know, it's over by 5 o'clock today.
Well, it may feel like that by 5 o'clock,
yeah.
but no, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm always doing, you know, you were talking about reading the paper in the morning. I'm constantly looking at scanning, and I, you know, there's a lot of bias in the media. So I scan all different types of media as
good,
a way to kind of cut through the bias.
To be informed.
Exactly.
You know, we're bumping up against the clock, Jill. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to share your contact information. How can people get a hold of you?
People can reach me through my website, which is www.jcs-usa.com. Again, that's jcs-usa.com.
Wonderful. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about making crystal clear decisions. Are you making them? If you're not, there's high prices to pay. You know who's up next. It's Angus. Stay tuned.
Peter at business1570.com.
And now it's time for another nagging Scottish moment. Take it away, Peter, you nag. Hey, thanks, laddie. Here's a nagging Scottish moment for you. There's power in crystal clear decisions. Peter, you stole those words from your guest. You can't fool me. I was listening to the first part of the show. That's plagiarism. Angus, my Celtic interruption, if you would have just let me finish what I was going to say, you know, I would have explained things that, you know, I'm picking up on the ideas Jill Johnson talks with so many people about, this whole idea, the importance of those crystal clear decisions. I'd have gotten there. I wasn't going to steal the idea. Relax. Why is that, Peter? Sometimes, you know, isn't it just best to make no decision at all? Why are you two so focused on making crystal clear decisions? Angus, usually it's not the best thing to not make a decision at all, because that is a decision in and of itself. I think when we procrastinate, if that's what we're doing, when firm, crystal clear decisions need to be made, I think we inevitably can, you know, lead us to a very bad situation and take it from bad to worse. Well, Peter, can you give us an example of that? Well, certainly. Just look at our national debt. Here we go again. Do you have to get political on every show, Peter? No, I'm not. I'll say this, Angus. Politics is the problem. You know, do we have the ability in this great nation to turn the ship around and steer out of the storm that we're heading right towards? The answer is a resounding yes. Will we make crystal clear decisions necessary to actually have a budget? Hey, there's a novel idea. Stop overspending, cut spending, eliminate our national debt. Well, Peter, that's impossible. Is it impossible? Really? Do you really think that's impossible? Well, I don't, but I'm not sure, and I'd say no, that we won't do it. Well, sadly, Angus, with the crew of spenders we have in both parties, I'm concerned you probably are right. We can't afford the wars we're fighting. We can't afford the unfunded liabilities of entitlements, and there are all these sacred cows. We need a clear, common-sense decision that will get our nation back to a healthier financial path. You know, one that's, you know, from a operating from a position of strength, financial stability in the world. Well, Peter, what's wrong with these bloody politicians? Do they really want us to become another Greece? Well, Angus, I'm sure there's a variety of motivations that lead people to make lousy decisions or no decisions. But the reality is our country definitely needs decisive leadership from men and women who care more about the long-term prospects of what we're leaving to coming generations than what they do about their own political power. I get it. Like my Uncle Argyle used to say about politics. Well, what's that, Angus? What did Uncle Argyle say? Well, he'd say politics comes from the Latin, poly meaning many, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites. I think your uncle was a pretty wise man. Well, I wouldn't go that far. But Peter, anyway, how does all this relate back to your world? This clear decision-making, back to your world of investing and financial planning. Well, Angus, as I've said from time to time, and I'll say it again, the old Wall Street adage of just hang in there, if you haven't noticed, it isn't working. The market is where it is where it was a year ago. It's where it was in 08 on the way down. It's where it was on the way up in 05. It's where it was on the way down in 01. It's where it was on the way up in 1998. 13 years. We are in a secular bear, an extended period of time which the market rises and falls repeatedly and trends downward and in a sense goes nowhere. Other periods like this have lasted 18 to 25 years. Do the math. I also believe personally, to an extent, we are in a depression, a period of lower economic activity, not coming back to the previous level of former activity. Not saying all food lines, you know, that's what people get when you use the word depression. But economically, things are off. Aye, Peter, you're really cheering us up today with adding that wee tidbit of encouragement to your litany of negativity. So what's your point, man? My point is, there are opportunities to prosper in times like these, providing you don't lose your shirt on the way down, speaking of your investments. With so many people getting closer to retirement, there isn't as much comfort or confidence in the old hang-in-there approach, that adage, so to speak. And frankly, I don't believe people should. Do we at the 401k have a crystal ball, 401k latte company? No. But it's my personal conviction that even if much harder times are coming because of scarcity of leadership, we can still make crystal clear decisions on our own. Well, that's just peachy keen. You made my day, Peter. I don't care if I spoiled your day, Angus. I'm more interested in helping other people with their financial future, not being passive, waiting and hoping that things get better. Hope is a virtue. It's not a strategy. And it's not an investment strategy, especially for times like this of such incredible volatility. And if you'd like to find out more about a strategy that aims to smooth out the volatility, that aims to mitigate loss, call us at the 401k Latte Company at 952-882-0400. Didn't get the last part in. 952-882-0400. And past performance, Peter, it doesn't guarantee jack, does it? No, that's right, Angus. And if your financial future, you're dealing with it, it's your financial future, I should say, decide to explore alternatives. At least be crystal clear about the fact that there are other things that you should be looking at. We are back after the news. Stay tuned.
Inheritance Tug of War Stories is the new book from Peter McClellan. Families are often torn apart by conflict when a loved one passes away. For more information, go to inheritancetugofwar.com.
Welcome back to the Peter McClellan Show. And if you're just joining us, we are joined today by Jill Johnson, and she is runs her own firm, Johnson Consulting Services. And she is fascinated with helping people make crystal clear decisions and the value that brings. And, you know, Jill, Angus and I were talking, bantering about the fact that it's, as an example, and again, not stepping in it politically, but the political situation is cantankerous. but there does seem to be a lack of an ability to make crystal clear decisions on what need to be made. I mean, there's big decisions that have to be made that people aren't going to like, that are perhaps going to be unpopular.
Well, I think that part of the struggle, I mean, beyond the political ideology that both parties bring to the table, what that creates is what I call myopic thinking. It's a tunnel vision that doesn't allow you to really understand and step back beyond the ideology. What are the facts on the ground? What's really going to be happening? And how is that going to end up rolling out over the next 15 years? What frightens me the most, because I deal with a lot of senior demographic related issues sometimes in the work that I do, when you've got people who are planning for retirement, and not just early stage retirement where you get to go golf a lot and have fun, but when you're really dealing with the end stage of your retirement life, when you're in your 80s and things are changing and you're looking at the end of that life as well, oftentimes what happens is that people have made bad decisions in spending all their cash and assets because, well, the government will just take care of me when I need. And what people don't understand, and I love to have the opportunity to talk about this, is that when you don't have the cash reserves and you haven't planned accordingly for a very long life, you end up in a situation where you lose absolute control to impact the outcome of what happens to you. People don't understand that sometimes when you're dealing with a Medicaid-based program, which is for poverty, so once you've spent all your assets and now the government, if you will, is taking care of you, you don't have the ability to walk away from the care that you're getting because often there's nowhere else for you to go. And so having the ability to plan for high-quality support services or retirement facilities or skilled nursing or even assisted living, when you're in a position to have the financial wherewithal to make a say, you're in a much better position. But people are making decisions in their 50s and 60s and 70s, well, I'll just let these other people I don't know that I have no relationship with make serious decisions and choices about my end of life.
Not a good idea.
I think the other thing that happens, and I see it all the time in assumptions, is twofold. One is they make mistakes. And I think the biggest mistakes politicians are making right now is they're making really ridiculously overly optimistic assumptions about revenue growth, about financial performance, and all of those things, rather than scaling back and going, well, what if we're wrong? And, you know, they'll give the assumptions to the Congressional Budget Office, and CBO will run scenarios based on the information that they're given.
I've never heard that scenario when it comes to government or the CBO. You know, the whole idea of what happens if, you know, like you were talking before in the first segment, you said one of the things you do with your clients is to make sure that they're running a lesser than perfect scenario, a less than, you know, a worse scenario, if you would. I never hear that come up when it comes to government.
Not at all, and because government never looks at the worst case. What if, and this is the piece that frightens me, what if government is wrong and they can't fund all the promises that they've made? To me, as an individual, you know, I'm planning personally for that what if, that worst case, so that I make financial decisions based on the fact that as a woman with no children, I will probably outlive my wonderful husband, Jack. And then who's going to care for me? Well, I have more ability to make those choices about my care if I'm careful about the money I spend today at 50 or 60 or whatever. And so politicians oftentimes make mistakes and they don't understand the issues. They have staff who actually are working on the issues. They usually get some talking points. They're often not as involved in the deep dive of the issues. And so they're making really critical decisions about subjects and topics for which they are not expert. And, you know, but they talk really well.
Well, yeah.
So they sound very informed. And so as a public, it's hard to know what to believe. And so you have to step back and go, you know, are the assumptions that they're presenting to us based on any level of real viability or any level of reality? And I think all too often it's based on ideology, not reality.
That's right.
And so, you know, that leads into the other assumption is mistake is the whole issue of manipulation. And, you know, there are people who do manipulate. I know how to play with the numbers. I can make the numbers say anything that I want to say because I'm really good at it.
What ultimately happens in the corporate world or even in the nonprofit, because you delve into that too,
right.
What happens when you are making decisions that are, have been manipulated, that are just spun for political motivation?
And there are internal politics in organizations too, so make no mistake about that. What happens then is that, you know, if you're a board member and you're being given assumptions and information that's been spun in a way that the executives want you to believe, the board member isn't astute enough to really ask and challenge the questioning. It's very difficult for you as an organization often to make the right decision, and you may end up with another Enron or an organization that goes bankrupt. And so oftentimes when there's an issue with the assumption viability or the anything that's red flagging you on an assumption, that's the time to step back and go, well, wait a minute, is that really the right one to look at?
I see that dynamic at play on both sides, meaning if you begin to question our military presence in Afghanistan or Iraq, well, you're not a patriot.
Exactly.
If you begin to question, was it Solyndra or the government getting involved with all these green projects, you must hate the environment.
Or you're a racist.
And yeah, these crazy assumptions. I mean, that's not healthy. That's manipulation right there.
Well, it's manipulation, and it goes back to that myopic thinking. And so, you know, when you look at the public, in whether it's through the business or through politics or through in your personal life, you have always got to make sure that the assumptions that you're using to evaluate the consequences of your decisions are based on a real set of viable circumstances, and that you remove the rhetoric. You know, pretty words don't really get you anywhere when you're 80 years old and you're eating cat food because you spent all your money and now your kids are living somewhere else and you have no one in your home to take care of you because you're afraid to let anybody know how frail or vulnerable you are. And there are definite pieces of that that we can control. And that's why I look at, when I talk about crystal clear decision making, it's what I call a knowing. It is absolutely looking at the truth of your circumstances and saying, I understand and I'm willing to accept the consequences of these choices. For me, when I look at spending money, you know, I always have a delay mode on. I mean, my husband says that, you know, sometimes that's not always a good quality. But for me, it's something that I leverage to allow me the freedom. I've been in business for 25 years.
Right.
I think this is like my fourth major recession. And most people who get into consulting as a business lasts 12 to 18 months, and only 10% survive 10 years. I've been making my living fully for almost 30 years now as a consultant. And so part of that and the reason that I've been able to survive is I plan ahead that it's not always going to be perfect and rosy and that money's not always going to be flowing, that there will be down times because there are peaks and valleys and
absolutely
ebbs and flows in every organization. And so, you know, that I think for people is always a key. And then the last assumption trigger that I always look at that people get flawed on is an issue relating to money. For most people, when they're spending money on things, they'll have a sales clerk tell them, oh, this is the best model, because they don't want to take the time to do any research because that's hard and it's boring and it takes time. But you can't be an informed consumer of anything unless you do a little bit of homework,
right?
Whether it's hiring a professional advisor or whether it's actually getting out and acquiring and purchasing a product. You've got to know what your decision criteria will be so that you can then make a better and a more informed decision and evaluate the options that you have in front of you. I remember when we were looking at buying our house, I had a whole list of criteria of what we were looking for, which I gave to my realtor on the front end. To his everlasting credit, we looked at 45 houses.
Yikes.
Yeah, he was committed to selling us something. But we also did what I tell people to do is, if it's not right, walk away.
Absolutely.
We made an offer on a house. They counteroffered, and it was just a ridiculously crazy counteroffer. And I picked up my marbles, and we left.
Right. Good.
Well, we ended up buying that house a month later.
Oh, really?
For $1,000 more out of pocket than my original offer.
Why was that?
Well, I wasn't willing to pay what the buyer thought it was worth because the buyer wasn't informed about what was in the market. We'd looked at 45 houses. We knew what things were really selling for. And the realtors took a cut in commission rather than letting us walk away again.
But you're saying you bought it for $1,000 more than what you offered?
Yeah.
that worked against you then?
No, it worked better for me because their original offer was, you know, like $20,000 apart.
Oh, okay.
When they
okay.
countered, it was ridiculously high. And so, but, you know, I wasn't afraid to walk away.
But that's the thing that I think right now is gripping people is there's indecision for whatever the reason is. You know, people are wondering, will our taxes go up? Will the economy slow further? And if so, how will it impact my business? So you're saying think ahead, plan for worst case scenario. What would you say to most business people then? I mean, what does that look like?
Well, it depends on the type of business. I mean, there are some sectors like in healthcare where the demographics are really driving the mm-hmm. market need. And
right.
so, you know, there are certain segments in certain areas where there clearly are opportunity if it's priced appropriately for the market that you're in. And I think the other businesses are really needing to retool. They're looking at how do we leverage technology? Technology doesn't require 401k. They don't require benefits. They don't require overtime, and they mm-hmm. don't talk back to you. So a lot of people that I know in small as well as larger business are looking at what else can we automate in our enterprise. They're looking at outsourcing rather than hiring employees. Employees are expensive.
Yeah, they are.
And so, you know, that doesn't help the job market, if you will. But, you know, it doesn't matter that Congress may be saying hire people. The truth of the matter is that the business has to be able to know that they can hire that employee and fund that employment
Absolutely.
For a 2 or 3 or 5 year window
right.
and, you know, still be able to make the owner's mortgage payment and cover their own costs. So it's a very tenuous balance, and I think that's where you really have to go in from a true planning point of view. Most small business people, frankly, Peter, they only plan really and really deeply when they do their startup because the bank requires the written form.
Right.
And most of them stop at that point. They may do a little bit here. They may do some deep dive on a particular issue there. But really stepping back and looking at horizons and event horizons and planning horizons, almost all of them never really take the time to do that fully. The ones who do are the ones who not only survive, but they thrive financially because
yeah.
they know where to put their best investment in, and they know which pieces to walk away. They know how the synergy of their whole business fits together
right.
rather than all the disparate ideas that spring into their head on any given day.
Mm. Okay, well, that's good stuff. Just curious, what would you say if you were sitting at the table with the six and six that are going to, you know, the super committee. What advice might you have for them?
You know what? I think that's another show segment. You may have to bring me back for that one. There's a lot I would say to them, and probably none of it would be good to talk about today.
All righty. We'll let it go. We'll let it go for now. But I just think,
bring
oh,
me back,
my.
I will tell them. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's shenanigans. But no, this is good stuff because, you know, the decisions need to be made that are positive. I empathize with business people right now. There is a tremendous amount of uncertainty, and I guess the old adage of you know, decide on what you can do that was within your control. You really can't control the economy, you can't control the politicians, but you can make decisions in your world.
You
right?
can control what you do.
And there you go.
And I always tell people, you know, a recession is also an opportunity for you to reinvent yourself.
Right.
One of the reasons I started working on the book, which has, you know, been in my head for a very long period of time, was that I think the time is right now for me to share those messages that I've shared with, you know, clients who may be paying a much larger fee than perhaps some of your audience can afford to do. But what it does is it's, you know, even I've had slow times in
sure.
my business. And so then I look at, well, what else do I need to change about my message? What else do I need to change about my website? I've learned how to use LinkedIn for a professional mm-hmm. situation. I'm expanding my database because I know eventually when the book is done, I'm going to need to have a good solid database of people
Absolutely.
That I can share it with, share the information on. And so again, it's always looking at those new opportunities. And I think too, I bring good advisors into my world because those are the people that can advise me, not for where I am now, but for what I want to be three
right.
and 5 years from
there you
now.
Go.
And maybe we can talk about that.
Sure, sure.
In
the multitude of counsel, there's wisdom. You get that wisdom. So you are listening to the Peter McClellan Show on AM 1570 Twin Cities Business Radio. And today we're talking about the business of making clear decisions. Are you making them? Are you able to? Or do you feel you're indecisive? You may need to give Jill a call. Jill, what's your contact information, quick?
My contact is you can reach me through my website at www.jcs-usa.com. Again, that's jcs-usa.com.
We're back after the break.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Peter McClellan Show, and if you're just joining us, you've missed a good one on making clearer decisions, and crystal clear decisions, in fact, and that's what Jill Johnson of Johnson Consulting encourages people to focus on. And if you missed the show, go back and listen to it. It's, you can go to thinkon.biz, B-I-Z, and hear a replay at that on your smartphone or your laptop, whatever you want to do. Jill, we're in our last segment here. Time is short, but how do you encourage people to bring together the best pool of advisors so they really get the counsel they need?
Well, I guess just briefly I'd like to say that people need to think about it in very pragmatic ways. There are people out there now that are coaches that really deal with more life skills. They're a little bit more motivational and inspirational. They're often not technically qualified to help advise you about the business. I had a client once that used a business astrologer, and you know, I wish that wasn't a true story, and made some pretty inappropriate financial decisions based off of
really?
The advice of the astrologer. We had a lot of damage control to do with that one. And then there are consultants. You know, as I was saying earlier, you know, most don't last long term. So what you have to weed out as an owner is who are the charlatans.
Mm.
You know, everybody and their brother is a consultant today. Everybody who's looking for their next job is a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who's a hairdresser is now a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
So I just tell people, be very wise about how you research and who you bring in so that you're not bringing in a charlatan who will do more damage to your decision-making than if you invest a little bit more than you think you can afford to bring in top-notch talent. I am always buying time from people who are out of my league, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the aspirational places that I want to be. So I want to surround myself with advisors who are playing in a different league than I normally play in. I'll pay more for them. I may use them in smaller increments. And if you've got a good person out there that you become of interest to,
mm-hmm.
you know, I get calls all the time from people who want to work with me, but most of them don't want to pay anything.
Right.
But if I get somebody who says, look, I'd like to buy a couple hours of your time to really do a couple things that I want to look at. It's just like in your business. If you've got a client who aspires to being
right.
at the financial level that you work with, if they come in and talk to you about what your expectations are and what do they need to do to prepare to get ready for you, they're going to be so much further ahead in their planning and their thinking. It's the same thing like in your book, Inheritance Tug of War Stories. You know, if families come together to make decisions before the death of a parent, they're going to make better collective
Absolutely.
Decisions if they
yeah.
plan ahead. And there's a whole rash of or range of decision criteria that you get in the financial situation. But getting good advisors, you know, somebody with your financial expertise would be critical to somebody that's really looking for how do I build that solid base of financial future.
Right.
The same thing when people call me for consulting, they're really looking at preparing and getting that solid base going forward.
Well, I love the idea of what you said is that you understand the value of the investment of buying up, getting counsel from people that maybe are a step above your league.
Absolutely.
If you want to play in that league eventually, you got to do it. They have the understanding. That makes perfect sense. You don't want to get the counsel from somebody that's, you know, down. That's beneath your league either.
And it's hard to know. So that's where you have to really do the research and understand, you know, who are the bigger players, who are the more sophisticated players,
yeah,
and then reach out to those resources and build that bridge, if you will.
Right.
I do it all the time.
I bet. Well, Jill, it's been a delight to have you here with us today on the Peter McClellan Show. Thanks for joining us. One more time, if you would, give our listeners your contact information.
You can reach me through my website at www.jcs-usa.com, or you can call my office at 763-571-3101.
What would you say, Angus? Well, Peter, you know, I'd say, thank God.
You've been listening to the Peter McClellan Show. Peter McClellan, CHFC, is the president of the 401k Latte Company. To reach Peter, call 952-882-0400 or on the web at 401klatte.com. This program is sponsored by the 401k Latte Company. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. For more information, go to www.401klatte.com or call 952-882-0400.